An alle Aufsichtspersonen: Verteilen Sie jetzt die Aufgabenbogen für den Prüfungsteil Hörverstehen. Die Prüfung beginnt in 2 Minuten. An die Kandidatinnen und Kandidaten: Beschriften Sie jetzt das Deckblatt des Aufgabenbogens Hörverstehen. Achtung! Lesen Sie die Aufgaben erst, wenn der englische Text beginnt. Berufsmaturität Wirtschaft 2019. Englisch Serie A und B. Sie können jetzt zur ersten Aufgabe gehen. This part of the examination consists of 3 different listening comprehension tasks. There will be pauses before and after each task to give you time to read the questions and to check your answers. You will hear each task twice. Food writer. In the first part of the test, you will hear a talk given by Jessica Morgan, a journalist who writes reviews of restaurants. As you listen, fill in the gaps 1 to 10 in the notes below with 1 to 3 words. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task 1. Ready?
Good afternoon. My name's Jessica Morgan. I'm a journalist and I write a regular newspaper column which features reviews of the restaurants where I've been eating recently. I also contribute to things like guidebooks which provide reviews of restaurants for tourists. Although I did once try to write a cookery book, I've never really been involved in the restaurant trade as such. I'm primarily just a writer with an interest in food. So what does the job involve? Well, people sometimes wonder how I cope, because it means eating out 6 days a week. Of course, it is important to try and eat a different type of meal each day. If it's fish today, then it'll be a curry or pasta tomorrow, for example. And although I'm particularly fond of Chinese food, it would be a mistake to have a Chinese meal too often. I'm particularly interested in dishes where the chef has done something original. There's no point in just having a steak and salad, because there would be nothing to write about. Also important for me is eating with someone. That way I get to see other things from the menu, plus someone else's impression of the place. I have to rely on my guests to try the puddings, because that really isn't my sort of thing, although I might just try a spoonful of a sweet to get an idea. I always carry a notebook in my handbag, but I don't take notes during the meal, as I prefer to scribble down my ideas when I get home. Sometimes, though, I need to note down any foreign words, because it would be embarrassing to get things wrong in another language. Of course, I don't have to pay for the meals I eat, but I try nonetheless to think about the price in terms of value for money. I think that's the most important service I can offer my readers. When it comes to the food, service, atmosphere and so on, I can only give my opinion. They decide if the whole package is worth spending their money on, so I don't make recommendations as such. I just offer factual information, rather than specifically recommending any one place. One thing people always say to me is that surely I'm now so well known that I get special treatment in restaurants. But nobody knows I'm coming because I book a table under another name, so I don't receive different treatment from anyone else.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
Good afternoon. My name's Jessica Morgan. I'm a journalist and I write a regular newspaper column which features reviews of the restaurants where I've been eating recently. I also contribute to things like guidebooks, which provide reviews of restaurants for tourists. Although I did once try to write a cookery book, I've never really been involved in the restaurant trade as such. I'm primarily just a writer with an interest in food. So what does the job involve? Well, people sometimes wonder how I cope, because it means eating out 6 days a week. Of course, it is important to try and eat a different type of meal each day. If it's fish today, then it'll be a curry or pasta tomorrow, for example. And although I'm particularly fond of Chinese food, it would be a mistake to have a Chinese meal too often. I'm particularly interested in dishes where the chef has done something original. There's no point in just having a steak and salad, because there would be nothing to write about. Also important for me is eating with someone. That way I get to see other things from the menu, plus someone else's impression of the place. I have to rely on my guests to try the puddings, because that really isn't my sort of thing, although I might just try a spoonful of a sweet to get an idea. I always carry a notebook in my handbag, but I don't take notes during the meal, as I prefer to scribble down my ideas when I get home. Sometimes, though, I need to note down any foreign words, because it would be embarrassing to get things wrong in another language. Of course, I don't have to pay for the meals I eat, but I try nonetheless to think about the price in terms of value for money. I think that's the most important service I can offer my readers. When it comes to the food, service, atmosphere and so on, I can only give my opinion. They decide if the whole package is worth spending their money on, so I don't make recommendations as such. I just offer factual information, rather than specifically recommending any one place. One thing people always say to me is that surely I'm now so well known that I get special treatment in restaurants. But nobody knows I'm coming because I book a table under another name, so I don't receive different treatment from anyone else.
This is the end of task one. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers. Now turn to task two. Graffiti. In the second part of the test, you will hear an interview with a graffiti artist. For questions 1 to 8, mark the best answer, A, B, or C. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task two. Ready?
With us today to talk about his passion is the graffiti artist Gregory Miller. Gregory, can you tell us a few things about yourself first?
Sure. I'm a graffiti artist who goes out and paints in the streets during the night when most civilized people are sleeping, but also during the day on legal walls or free walls, as they're called in Switzerland. Mostly these walls are in old factories, youth clubs, or some such place. All I use is an idea, a sketchbook, and a spray can.
Do you ever worry about getting into trouble?
Sure, but like most graffiti artists, I have the attitude no risk, no fun. If the police catch you, it'll cost you a fortune to have the walls cleaned. Most sprayers always spray the same tag, so it can be recognized, and they can become famous. But if the police catch you in the act, this also gives them the evidence that it was you who was responsible for all the other tagging. Fines in this case could easily cost you thousands of dollars. That's why certain famous graffiti artists who had problems with the police had to leave the country.
Can you tell us something about the origins of graffiti?
Graffiti is a style of art which was invented during the 1980s in the United States by the kids who lived in the ghettos. Through graffiti, they could express their feelings and their anger, but that's just one part of it. Most of it's just fun, and it's about competition between different artists and gangs. It's a way of fighting with each other without using guns and fists. It's the same thing with rap, human beatbox, DJing, and breakdancing, the other four elements of hip-hop. It's all about competition to see who's the greatest.
Do you have any ambitions regarding your work?
Yes, but not commercially driven ones. This kind of art is real and honest, because you'll never earn money with it. So it's all just for the scene and for yourself. What I want to do with my art is to bring color to the gray areas of the city where there are no plants or trees, or other real signs of life. I want to show other people that another more vibrant world is possible, and that they just have to wake up and realize that they don't have to live in a sterile environment. What I also hope is that one day, even the older generation will like my paintings and understand what they're saying.
Do you consider your art to be harmful in any way?
I often ask myself if what I do is okay, because it causes damage, and that's not something you can overlook. But I made rules for myself, like to respect old houses, brick walls, and people's cars. I just spray on gray concrete walls or on walls which are already full of tags. I don't want to annoy other people, but sometimes there's no way to avoid it.
How did you get into graffiti in the first place?
I had always painted cartoons or naturalistic stuff since I was about 5, but one day a guy joined our class who was a member of a famous crew. He always did his graffiti sketches during lessons, and I thought they were pretty impressive, so I wanted to learn that style as well. At the beginning, he always said that I was a toy. That's a bad graffiti artist, until another friend showed me the rules for graffiti painting. For me, graffiti is the attempt to harmonize shape and color. You want to make every single thing perfect, which is nearly impossible. So it's a never-ending quest to perfect your art. I'm sure that I'll never get to the point where I'm fed up with it.
Do you think that your work has a wide appeal, or is it just appreciated by young people?
Certainly most people don't even see this as art because they're just not open-minded or receptive enough for it. They're too stressed to bother considering what it might mean and just see it as destruction. Actually, I think age is irrelevant. Before I was into graffiti myself, I never got what it was all about. Now I know nearly every important street artist by his artistic name.
Do you have any ideas for your next sketch?
Sure, but it doesn't always go the way you planned. If you attempt to create something special, it attracts more people. But now you're often forced to spray huge, ugly, black, silver graffitis because you never know how long you've got. You need eyes in the back of your head to see if anyone is using a mobile phone to report you to the police. I'd say it's a pity we can't always create something beautiful, but we live in a repressive society.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
With us today to talk about his passion is the graffiti artist Gregory Miller. Gregory, can you tell us a few things about yourself first?
Sure, I'm a graffiti artist who goes out and paints in the streets during the night when most civilized people are sleeping, but also during the day on legal walls, or free walls, as they're called in Switzerland. Mostly these walls are in old factories, youth clubs, or some such place. All I use is an idea, a sketchbook, and a spray can.
Do you ever worry about getting into trouble?
Sure, but like most graffiti artists, I have the attitude no risk, no fun. If the police catch you, it'll cost you a fortune to have the walls cleaned. Most sprayers always spray the same tag, so it can be recognized, and they can become famous. But if the police catch you in the act, this also gives them the evidence that it was you who was responsible for all the other tagging. Fines in this case could easily cost you thousands of dollars. That's why certain famous graffiti artists who had problems with the police had to leave the country.
Can you tell us something about the origins of graffiti?
Graffiti is a style of art which was invented during the 1980s in the United States by the kids who lived in the ghettos. Through graffiti, they could express their feelings and their anger. But that's just one part of it. Most of it's just fun, and it's about competition between different artists and gangs. It's a way of fighting with each other without using guns and fists. It's the same thing with rap, human beatbox, DJing, and breakdancing, the other four elements of hip-hop. It's all about competition to see who's the greatest.
Do you have any ambitions regarding your work?
Yes, but not commercially driven ones. This kind of art is real and honest, because you'll never earn money with it. So it's all just for the scene and for yourself. What I want to do with my art is to bring color to the gray areas of the city where there are no plants or trees, or other real signs of life. I want to show other people that another more vibrant world is possible, and that they just have to wake up and realize that they don't have to live in a sterile environment. What I also hope is that one day, even the older generation will like my paintings and understand what they're saying.
Do you consider your art to be harmful in any way?
I often ask myself if what I do is okay because it causes damage, and that's not something you can overlook. But I made rules for myself, like to respect old houses, brick walls, and people's cars. I just spray on gray concrete walls or on walls which are already full of tags. I don't want to annoy other people, but sometimes there's no way to avoid it.
How did you get into graffiti in the first place?
I had always painted cartoons or naturalistic stuff since I was about 5, but one day a guy joined our class who was a member of a famous crew. He always did his graffiti sketches during lessons, and I thought they were pretty impressive, so I wanted to learn that style as well. At the beginning, he always said that I was a toy. That's a bad graffiti artist, until another friend showed me the rules for graffiti painting. For me, graffiti is the attempt to harmonize shape and color. You want to make every single thing perfect, which is nearly impossible. So it's a never-ending quest to perfect your art. I'm sure that I'll never get to the point where I'm fed up with it.
Do you think that your work has a wide appeal, or is it just appreciated by young people?
Certainly most people don't even see this as art because they're just not open-minded or receptive enough for it. They're too stressed to bother considering what it might mean and just see it as destruction. Actually, I think age is irrelevant. Before I was into graffiti myself, I never got what it was all about. Now I know nearly every important street artist by his artistic name.
Do you have any ideas for your next sketch?
Sure, but it doesn't always go the way you planned. If you attempt to create something special, it attracts more people. But now you're often forced to spray huge, ugly, black, silver graffitis because you never know how long you've got. You need eyes in the back of your head to see if anyone is using a mobile phone to report you to the police. I'd say it's a pity we can't always create something beautiful, but we live in a repressive society.
This is the end of task 2. Now turn to task 3. Funding higher education. In the third part of the test, you will hear an interview with Cora Pierce, Director of Human Resources at Swanson's, a national chain of supermarkets. For questions 1 to 5, decide whether the statements are true or false. Correct the false ones using up to 5 keywords. You now have 30 seconds in which to look at task 3. Ready?
Cora, you have recently sat on a government committee that looked into the funding of higher education. Can I begin by asking you why you think it's important for business leaders to be involved in higher education?
Well, although many university graduates still enter the teaching profession or follow an academic career, an increasing number are employed by the business community. This is a major destination for new graduates, so it's only natural that we should want to have a say in higher education, the courses that are being offered, and so on.
And why do you think the supermarket chain Swanson's needed to be represented on the government committee?
Well, about 50% of jobs that come onto the market don't require a specific degree, so they're known as non-specialist. This area is made up mostly of the service and retail sectors, with the retail sector alone accounting for 11% of graduate jobs. The high-tech industries, for example, IT and manufacturing, were already represented on the committee, and we thought that the opinions of the non-specialist employer, like Swanson's, should also be taken into account.
What about the findings of the committee? What was important to you there?
Well, firstly, that employers are looking for more than a body of knowledge. In today's world, the specialised knowledge that a student gains has a short lifespan. It won't necessarily be relevant in 20 years' time. The committee recognised that higher education needs to take on board the fact that employers are looking for more universal skills, in particular those of communication, economics and IT.
What other findings of the committee were important to you?
Another finding was recognising the importance of applied research. One problem in Britain is the gap between the discovery of certain innovations and actually putting them into practice. That's where, as a country, we don't do as well as some of our competitors. We've got a wonderful record for pure research, but this doesn't always lead to economic growth. That's where we need to build better links between industry and higher education.
And do you think these findings are equally important for small businesses?
Yes, even more so. Small businesses don't have time to train people to the extent that large organisations do. It's particularly important to them that graduates have the skills to go into the workplace and make a contribution right from the start. I think the key skills that we've already talked about, together with work experience, are very helpful in that sort of situation.
Cora Pierce, thank you for coming to the studio to talk to us.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
Cora, you have recently sat on a government committee that looked into the funding of higher education. Can I begin by asking you why you think it's important for business leaders to be involved in higher education?
Well, although many university graduates still enter the teaching profession or follow an academic career, an increasing number are employed by the business community. This is a major destination for new graduates. So it's only natural that we should want to have a say in higher education, the courses that are being offered, and so on.
And why do you think the supermarket chain Swanson's needed to be represented on the government committee?
Well, about 50% of jobs that come onto the market don't require a specific degree, so they're known as non-specialist. This area is made up mostly of the service and retail sectors, with the retail sector alone accounting for 11% of graduate jobs. The high-tech industries, for example, IT and manufacturing, were already represented on the committee, and we thought that the opinions of the non-specialist employer, like Swanson's, should also be taken into account.
What about the findings of the committee? What was important to you there?
Well, firstly, that employers are looking for more than a body of knowledge. In today's world, the specialised knowledge that a student gains has a short lifespan. It won't necessarily be relevant in 20 years' time. The committee recognised that higher education needs to take on board the fact that employers are looking for more universal skills, in particular, those of communication, economics, and IT.
What other findings of the committee were important to you?
Another finding was recognising the importance of applied research. One problem in Britain is the gap between the discovery of certain innovations and actually putting them into practice. That's where, as a country, we don't do as well as some of our competitors. We've got a wonderful record for pure research, but this doesn't always lead to economic growth. That's where we need to build better links between industry and higher education.
And do you think these findings are equally important for small businesses?
Yes, even more so. Small businesses don't have time to train people to the extent that large organisations do. It's particularly important to them that graduates have the skills to go into the workplace and make a contribution right from the start. I think the key skills that we've already talked about, together with work experience, are very helpful in that sort of situation.
Cora Pierce, thank you for coming to the studio to talk to us.
This is the end of task 3. You now have 2 minutes to check your answers. This is the end of the listening comprehension test. Stop writing and hand in your papers.